This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This show examines the latest legal topics and news facing families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. It is hosted by lawyers Rob Schenck and Will Smith of Schenck Smith LLC, a personal injury law firm based in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show. Hello out there, and thanks for joining us. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith,
the man with the golden voice. And we are trial lawyers practicing.
All right, Mike Tyson. Let's just keep going here.
Okay.
Not all the time we get a Tyson reference in.
Practicing in the areas of nursing home abuse and neglect in the state of Georgia. And we are also your hosts for the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. A lot of good things to talk about today. Anything interesting going on in your life today, Will?
Why would you do that? Like, I don't know what to say to that question. Why would you do that?
Because it's been a couple months since I've attempted that, and I thought that maybe you told me that you were going to improv camp.
That's not true at all. None of that is true.
You didn't tell me that you were going to improv summer camp at Lake Winnipetoga in North Georgia.
That's not even a name of any lake in North Georgia.
Do you have all of the lakes in North Georgia cataloged?
I would know if there's one called Winnipetoga.
Okay. So, Will, anything interesting going on with you lately?
I settled a very long and contentious suit about 2 or 3 weeks ago that I'm still wrapping up. But that was a suit that had been going on for about 3.5 years. And we got a very good result for the client. It's something that we did in mediation. So it was good. It was a huge relief for the client and, you know, a lot off of our plate as well, so we can start looking at other cases.
That's excellent. I'm glad that you mentioned that as your response to my question, because today's podcast, a majority of the time, we're going to spend talking about what makes a nursing home case particularly difficult. So you mentioned that your case was going on for 3.5 years. That can, you know, that's a long time. And sometimes these cases go on for a long time because they are, in fact, difficult.
Yeah. And actually, not to jump ahead too much, but I do see a good segue here, because one of the things that we were going to talk about is the comorbidities in these cases that can make them difficult. And actually, one of the things that made this case so difficult is that, in addition to the damages that were caused by the defendant's negligence in this case that I recently settled, this client also had a host of problems, from diabetes to diabetic neuropathy to degenerative issues with her spine, to problems with both shoulders. And so, you know, that's just comorbidities and pre-existing conditions are always one of the first problems that we have.
That's right. So there are, just as from a basic standpoint, a nursing home case is going to be made up of a couple factors. Will describes it as being a stool. So there has to be some type of act or omission on the part of the nursing home.
So it's a three-legged stool, and the first one is?
An act or omission on the part of the nursing home. The second is that act or omission causes the third leg of the stool, which is damages, meaning some type of injury. So you have the act that causes an injury, and that's the stool that the case sits on.
And so, you must have all three.
Right.
You cannot just have, well, we got two of them. You absolutely, they are dependent on each other. You have to have all three of those.
So we're going to be looking at the defects of each of the legs of the stool that make a case difficult. So in terms of the first leg, which is the act or non-act of the nursing home, you know, big issues in nursing home cases are going to come down to, well, did the actual nursing home do something they weren't supposed to do? And that can be highly contentious. So an example of that, a hypothetical, would be a resident that needs assistance in transferring. If the doctor is requiring that the nursing home use a Hoyer lift or two people to assist, but in fact only one person aids the resident in transferring, and that resident falls, then that's an act that is falling below the standard of care for that nursing home, and that first leg of that stool exists. But what happens if there is no doctor's order, or there's not a direct recommendation on how many people to assist in the transfer?
There's no specific regulation that says you must do this to transfer this type of resident.
Correct. Yeah. And so the nursing home might say one person is enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or if it's three people but two people help, they might say two people is enough. So that's a difficulty in the first leg of the stool. Did the nursing home breach the standard of care? Many times, though, that's really not going to be an issue. Not necessarily it's not going to be an issue, but most often the injury attorney is going to have the most difficulty with that second leg of the stool, which is causation. There is a fallacy, a misconception that most lay people have, that just because something happens prior to another thing, that the first event causes the second event. That is in logic class, that's a logical fallacy called post hoc ergo proctor hoc. Before, therefore, because.
Yeah, it's this. I don't know why you're doing that. Why are you doing that?
Because, I mean, you want to smash your face into the microphone as much as possible.
Yeah, this, therefore, this. So, basically, because result B occurred after event A, A, therefore, caused B. You know, and it's absurd. It would be like if it rained outside, and then your mother told you that her and your father were getting divorced, you said, well, because it rained, my parents are getting divorced. That would be an absurd one that no one would follow. But what often happens is ones that are a lot more subtle, where, you know, something could happen. Hey, I drank Diet Coke, you know, all my life, and now I have cancer. Therefore, Diet Coke caused cancer.
You're getting a little closer. And in the case of a nursing home abuse or neglect case, it's going to be something along the lines of, did the nursing home cause the urinary tract infection, and did that urinary tract infection, to the exclusion of all other things, cause septic shock and death?
Yeah.
Often that requires expert testimony for an individual with the requisite amount of training to connect the dots by a reasonable amount of medical certainty, or by a preponderance of the evidence, that A caused B. And, you know, and again, I know it's hard to conceptualize it unless you go to the absurd, which is the rain caused the divorce. It's hard to understand that just because something happened before doesn't mean that it caused it.
And even if it is the type of thing that can cause that result. So in like a nursing home case, let's say that they have not changed the individual, their adult brief, in several days, and there was urination in it. They were soaking wet. That type of thing can 100% cause a urinary tract infection. And a urinary tract infection can be serious enough to cause death. So you've got a situation where they haven't changed that person, and they have a UTI. It might seem reasonable that their failure to change that person caused the UTI, which led to urosepsis, which led to death. And in fact, you very well may discover that. But it isn't a guarantee, because an expert could review that case and go, well, the fact of the matter is, this person has a history of UTIs, has some sort of medical condition with their urethra, or a host of other things which also cause UTIs. And so in looking at this case, I cannot say with a reasonable degree of medical certainty that this failure to change the person to the exclusion of all other comorbidities that this person may have or cofactors is the cause of the sepsis that led to their death.
That's right. In looking at the third part of the stool, which would be the damages, and,
sure.
And damages is another way of saying the injury.
So, yeah.
In other words, what is the result of the act or omission that caused something? What's mm-hmm. that something? So the something could be a broken bone. It could be sepsis. It could be death. It could be amputation. What is the end result of the act or omission of the nursing home? And what makes that component difficult, we won't say difficult, but what affects the value of the case is oftentimes the severity of that injury. So in terms of that, so for going back to the example of the lift, so let's say that a resident should have a two-person assist when transferring, but only one person does it. And that resident is dropped. So you have a definite negligent act that has caused something, and that something is a broken bone. That case would be valuable, but not as valuable as a case in which the nursing home used one person to transfer when it should have been a two-person assist, causing the resident to be dropped. The resident hits their heads, gets a subdural hematoma, and dies within 2 hours.
And understand something, again, and we, you know, say this every time we talk about valuation of these cases. When we say valuable, that is not a judgment call. We hope that people never have a valuable case. You don't, and that is a good way to look at damages to begin with, is if you feel a certain sense of relief that it could have been a lot worse, then we may not be the remedy that you need. And it may be one of those things where you call an ombudsman or let DCH know. So the type of damages that would require the services of attorneys like us are going to be the type of damages that are absolutely horrible for the nursing home resident, and they're extreme situations and they're catastrophic.
And so those are some of the issues that, and just a couple of the issues of each of the legs of the stool. But outside of that leg of the stool, some things that can make the nursing home case difficult, in our experience, are sometimes the particular insurance company that is covering or has the policy yeah. for the nursing home. And sometimes it's the law firm that represents that insurance company. Some law firms have a reputation for be stonewalling or not being up front with things. Same with some of the insurance companies.
It can also be, in addition to the insurance company itself, it can be a lack of insurance.
That's true.
Some nursing homes that we have encountered have very limited liability insurance. I'm talking like $50,000. That's not enough to drive a case.
So just a quick primer on this, because we get this question a lot, is that, you know, if your loved one has been hurt in a nursing home, you might say, well, just sue the nursing home. The issue with that is that sometimes these facilities, you know, if there's no insurance policy at play, you're suing the facility alone, and then you would get a judgment against that facility and would have to collect. And these facilities can go into bankruptcy. They can have no assets. They can be run down and have nothing. And so you have a judgment against a facility that's really just a piece of paper saying they owe you a certain amount of money.
A piece of paper that is worth absolutely nothing. And again, it's not that justice isn't important. It's that the reality is there has to be some way to get money from that defendant or you can't pursue the case.
That's why insurance is such an important factor in these cases.
Yeah.
And that's why you always hear injury lawyers talking about insurance, because generally you know, if there's an insurance policy at play, at least you're not going to be stuck out in the rain in terms of just having that piece of paper that says the nursing home owes you money.
Yeah.
Insurance companies are generally obligated to pay out if there's a verdict. So there's not an issue with that. That's why we talk about insurance.
Yeah.
That's why we talk about the insurance can be a difficult component of these cases, because some insurance companies are very tight. Some in their calculus in evaluating these cases say, you know, bring it on. We're willing to risk the verdict versus settling this case with you.
Yeah.
So other than the issues with the actual stool or the legs of the case, those are some of the other issues that can, you know, that make a case difficult. But at the end of the day, if you're listening to this, if your loved one, if you suspect negligence or you suspect abuse, it's good to call somebody. It's good to call an ombudsman. It's good to call an attorney, because an attorney is going to have, or an ombudsman is going to have access to information that you don't, to really look at the three legs of your stool and to understand kind of another perspective on whether or not there's an actual actionable case.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
and with that, there's an actual news article that I wanted to kind of talk about for a couple minutes. This is coming to us from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Looks like it says Leonard Smith, a 70-year-old advanced dementia patient living at Oklahoma Veterans Center in Tallahassee, Oklahoma, choked to death on January 31st after being given food, fluids, and medication. A medical examiner determined that Smith's probable cause of death was asphyxia due to choking on a 2-foot trash bag lodged deep in Smith's throat. The Tulsa World began investigation after maggots were found in the body of another resident, a deceased veteran at that home. So a lot of things jumping out at me at this. It looks like the medical examiner's report says that in regards to Mr. Smith, a twisted clear trash bag was found covered in pink vomitus. The trash bag is intact and measures 24 inches in length by 1 inch in width when twisted. When the trash bag is untwisted, it measures 5 inches in width. I think in this particular case, what you have, and this was found by the Oklahoma Department of State, the State Department of Health, this resident had a propensity for swallowing things.
Like a child, he has dementia. So there is cognitive impairment.
Right. So there was a previous example. They found that he had previously passed a portion of an examination glove. So he had swallowed an examination glove. So this nursing home. So here's the thing is that when you have it, this brings up the issue of, is a nursing home, I mean, this is egregious and it's terrible that this individual choked on a trash bag, okay? What is the liability of the nursing home in this instance? If, you know, and that will have to do with what is the constructive knowledge that this resident would do something like that? What is the knowledge the nursing home has that this individual has a propensity to swallow objects? If the nursing home knows that he has a propensity to swallow objects, then they have a duty to lessen the likelihood that's going to happen through various means, either observing him while he's eating or basically keeping things out of reach for him.
Mm-hmm. I think that in this situation, if they had prior knowledge that he had swallowed a latex glove, that, you know, there's grounds for liability there. But it goes back to some of the other things that we've talked about in prior podcasts, which are residents' rights. They're humans. Even if they have dementia, they still have a right to a certain amount of liberty. So, I mean, you could put this man in a room that had nothing but soft edges and padded walls and zero objects that he could pick up and hurt himself with. But what kind of life is that, even if he's got dementia? So if they don't know that he has a propensity to do something, they can't just lock him up and take away every, you know, dangerous object from his physical presence.
Right. So it's going to come down to that line of, okay, what did the nursing home know, which they know that he has a propensity to swallow gloves, weigh that against his rights as a human person just to live. Sure. In harmony with his surroundings. And then could they, doing that, should this have been prevented? And I think that based on this facts of this, that we don't know, but I lean towards if he has access to that big of a trash bag, they might have been doing something that they weren't supposed to do, and they might not have been watching him. And based on the fact that in this same nursing home, a previous resident had been found with maggots in his body, they are probably woefully understaffed.
Yeah.
And woefully undertrained. So there's probably a systematic issue with this nursing home.
And when you have individuals with that level of cognitive impairment, you also have a higher requirement for more supervision. So the regulation that requires them to have higher supervision is one that could have been breached here, because you have a dementia patient. You don't treat them the same way as somebody who's got all of their mental faculties in place. So that could have been another cause for liability there, not just knowing that he had a propensity to do something.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's a horrible situation. And one of the things that gets me is the one of the relatives said, you know, what really bothers her after his death are all the what ifs. You know, what if they had gone there every day? You know, what if they had been more involved? Would that have changed things? And, you know, as much as we may want to comfort somebody like that, the reality is, yeah, it would have changed. It could have changed things. It certainly could have. Getting more involved, and we say this time and time again, in your loved one's care while at a nursing home is of the utmost importance. And, you know, in the family, you know, regardless of whether or not the family ever went and saw this guy, at the end of the day, they're neither morally nor legally on the hook. But as a pragmatic matter, it is always beneficial to your loved one if you get involved. But, at the end of the day, the nursing home is the one who is both morally and legally responsible for this resident. And I think in this situation, they could have done more to prevent this from happening, especially given the history of this nursing home. I mean, the maggots in the other guy, I mean, that's insane. That has to cause a smell that the staff could pick up on.
That's insane.
This place is woefully understaffed.
Yeah, to say the least.
Yeah.
To say the least. Moving on to another probably understaffed nursing home. This one comes to us from Columbia, Pennsylvania. A Susquehanna Valley Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Columbia hired a temporary manager after numerous recent inspections by the Department of Health. The facility failed to investigate and report abuse, failed to provide a sanitary environment, and failed to follow physicians' orders. Video footage shared by our former staff showed the facility's kitchen infested with cockroaches, and is what led the Department of Health to step in and appoint the temporary manager. It looks like over the last 6 months, surveys by the Department of Health at the Susquehanna Valley Nursing Home showed the facility failed to investigate and report abuse, neglect, and misappropriation of resident funds, failed to provide a sanitary environment, and allowed strong odors of urine to persist, and failed to follow physicians' orders. And here, it looks as though, I mean, again, when you're dealing with understaffed, undertrained personnel, this is going to happen. And it looks based on this article that the only thing that this nursing home has done is just changed managers. So that may or may not lead to changes. But I mean, just because you fire one guy, put another guy in place, doesn't mean anything's going to change.
And you know, one of the things I was talking with about an expert that we have who is a physician who works in a nursing home in a neighboring state was telling me that one of the nursing homes that he works in, he was astonished to find what the administrator of the nursing home made. It's in the high six figures, made a year, and also astonished to find what the bonuses that administrator made. And the way that they make bonuses is by cutting costs. Now, clearly, you know, even from a non, like even from the nursing home's point of view, as a corporation, as a heartless, thoughtless corporation, it, you know, there is a limit to how much money you want to cut, because you end up diving deep into a situation like this where you don't have any staff, even in the kitchen, and you're opening yourself up to a lot of lawsuits. But these places push the limits. They see how far they can go. So you end up having a situation like this that incentivizes profits over patients. So they cut kitchen staff. They cut maintenance staff that can include not only the sanitation aspect of the nursing home, but, you know, pest control. They cut the healthcare staff. And that's something else that's important to realize, is that these nursing homes are communities. So when we talk about staff, you don't just have CNAs, LPNs, and RNs. You also have sanitation workers. You also have dietitians. You also have administration. You also have people who work under the dietitians in the kitchen, right? So you have an entire community full of individuals that are not just looking out for their immediate and direct health care, getting them out of bed, giving them medicine. You've also got people that are supposed to keep the room clean, supposed to keep the food clean, supposed to keep the kitchen clean. So when they start cutting spending in order to save these corporations money, you end up with horrible situations like this where, you know, it may not be talking about a specific injury to a resident, but you've got a nursing home that has cockroaches in the kitchen.
Yeah, if you wouldn't take your grandmother or grandfather to a restaurant that has a cockroach infestation in the kitchen, then
yeah,
you're generally not going to want to take them to a nursing home that has a cockroach infestation. Ugh. It's a indication of poor everything.
Yeah. So that is a frightening thought that there are places like this.
Yeah. Yeah, and our, you know, we will check back up on that. The Susquehanna Valley Nursing Home and Rehabilitation Center. One of my favorite bands in the whole world is called Clutch, and they have a song that references the Susquehanna River. So I'm assuming that's nearby. The Susquehanna River is nearby the Susquehanna. I love all these. I feel like a lot of these news articles and a lot of that we get are Native American based names that are really interesting, and there are videos on YouTube, where you can watch. It'll be like California residents pronounce cities in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And one of them I remember, and this is because there a lot of them are based on Native American names. I think mostly Cherokee, and at least in Georgia, it's mostly Cherokee names.
Maybe,
but one of them was Dahlonega. So you're seeing Dahlonega written, and they're trying to, and it's really funny. But
can you only imagine them trying to pronounce where I'm from? Sauti Nacoochee.
I think actually that's one of them.
Yeah, Sauti Nacoochee.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get all salt in the coochie. I get all kinds of things. So.
And on that note.
What a note it was.
Yeah. This story and that anecdote will conclude this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast can be consumed in two different ways. You can either download the audio on Stitcher or iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from, or you can watch us. You can actually see the video of this happening on our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. or you can check us out on our YouTube channel. And with that, we thank you again for coming and visiting us, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.